Welcome to New Books in Politics on the New Books Network. I'm your host, Bill Scher. Today we are joined by longtime Democratic Party activist Thomas B. Reston, who has just written the new book, Soul of a Democrat, published by All Points Books. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
What compelled you in your history of political activism and government service to write this book?
I'm very alarmed by the conversation of the Democratic Party these days. And I wanted to help remind the Democrats of what their purpose is in the life of America. I think they need to think about themselves more carefully than they have been during the last generation. And I think we're at a new inflection point in American politics where conceivably the next generation of political dominance will be settled. And I think the Democrats have to be serious about themselves.
So we're coming off of a period where Democrats have won the presidential popular vote in every election save one since 1992. We had Barack Obama, even though he wasn't able to pass the baton to Hillary Clinton, still had a successful two terms, left with still has strong popularity. Obviously, Democrats are not in a good place with Trump in the White House and Republicans controlling Congress, but can you argue that Democrats aren't that deep in the wilderness, considering that they are still winning the popular vote and Barack Obama's legacy is still considered relatively well amongst most people?
Well, you can certainly argue that, but I think if you look at where the party is in terms of the election results, we are at about our lowest point in almost a century. We have not only been blocked out of the White House, we've been staggered in the Senate, we're way behind in the House, and catastrophically, we have been ejected from the governor's mansions and the state houses across America, so that we are currently in control of only six of the 50 state governments. I am not necessarily pessimistic about the Democratic Party, but I think the essential question, the fundamental problem of the Democratic Party lies within the Democratic Party itself. And I think the Democrats have to pick up the mirror in order to decide how to go forward.
So your book, Soul of a Democrat, spends most of its time talking about the history of the Democratic Party and the legacy of its most prominent presidents. Why do you think that lies the key for how Democrats should be moving forward?
Well, the book is about half political history and half meditation on current day politics. My argument is that the purpose of the Democratic Party is to be found in its core ideals. And its core ideals do, in fact, come from historical struggles that the Democrats had with their opponents in the past. And I think those particular struggles that gave the party its political myth, if you were, set up conversations that future generations of Democrats had to take into account as they set their strategy for their own time in the life of the Republic.
Now, you focus on Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, William Jennings Bryan, who was not president but ran for president several times, Woodrow Wilson, FDR, Harry Truman, Lyndon Johnson. Now, if you ask the average Democrat or liberal slash progressive today, they may speak warmly of FDR, Truman, and Johnson, but they are less inclined to speak warmly of Jefferson, Jackson, and Wilson, largely because of issues regarding race. Why should Democrats look more closely at the records of those of their more ancestral presidents and not be looking at them through modern eyes and re-examining their legacies in terms of race?
I think Democrats should be looking at figures like Jefferson, Jackson, and Wilson through modern eyes. But it isn't the policies of Jefferson or the policies of Jackson or the specific policies of Wilson that are of use to Democrats today. Obviously, Jefferson's slaveholding or the Trail of Tears with Andrew Jackson or Wilson's views about submarine warfare or racial segregation are of no use whatsoever to Democrats today. But their political approach to the political struggle, to the power struggle, is very, very much indeed relevant to today's politics. It is the ideals of these people and their approach to politics that is significant for Democrats today.
So Democrats have been moving away from this, but for a long time, all the state annual dinners were Jefferson Jackson dinners as a way to maintain that historic tie to their more populist inclinations. And so while they've been moving away from using the moniker Jefferson Jackson because of these racial revisionism, you do see a big embrace of populism, particularly in the case of the Bernie Sanders campaign. Do you not think that Democrats are just inherently attracted to following the Jefferson Jackson model, even if they haven't looked that deeply into the history as of late?
Well, I think the party is definitely moving to the left since the 2016 election. And I think that figures like Jefferson and Jackson are very useful to Democrats if they will focus on their ideals today. But I am a believer in the thought that it is good for the Democratic Party once again to focus on this part of its political myth, which is the fight for the outsider and economic justice. That myth came into the party with Andrew Jackson in 1829. So I think it is in a time of confusion in politics, and I think most everyone is confused these days about the political situation. It is very helpful for Democrats to look at their own history and be clear about what their purpose is in the life of the nation. Part of the problem of the Democratic Party is that our purpose has become muddied in the last generation, and we need to sort this out and be clearer in our minds about where we want to be taking the nation and what our governing instinct is. And I think the figures from our past can be very, very useful to current day Democrats.
Now, there is a tension in the party. Sometimes it's called, populist versus establishment. But there's definitely a tension between those that want to frame the debate as sort of the people versus corporate influence, corporate power, and people that are recoiling from populist demagoguery, seeing as it has led to a President Trump and wanting to bring back notions of expertise and reason. When you look at the Jackson presidency, you talk in the book about his fight with against the Bank of the United States, Second Bank of the United States. We're also in a period where people are lauding Alexander Hamilton in a way that we haven't in decades, who fought Jefferson over these matters. And there's a notion among some Democrats that Hamilton had the better argument. And when Jackson destroyed the Second Bank of the United States, that wasn't good for the economy. So is there a downside to reconnecting to that populist fervor in that it doesn't necessarily lead to good governance?
Well, there's definitely a downside to it if you connect into it the way President Trump has connected into it. His effort, in my view, amounts to a politics of serpentry. But the ignominious thing for Democrats is that he has taken one of their great political core ideals, which is the fight for the outsider, and he has twisted it and perverted it to his own personal ends. But he has succeeded in snatching it away from the Democratic Party temporarily. I think that what we have to remember here is that there are different ways to make a populist argument. There are different ways to appeal to the working class in this country. And the Democratic way to appeal to the working class is not the way Donald Trump has done it. But the recovery of this particular constituency is absolutely vital to recovering the political soul of the Democratic Party.
You mentioned in your chapter on Wilson, and you know, most of the talk of Wilson lately is how he there was some resegregation of the federal government on his watch, of the federal workforce. Folks on the right tend to harp on his abuse of civil liberties during what was called the Great War, or in the aftermath of the Great War with the Palmer raids. But you talk about his domestic policy legislation in the first term, and how he had to balance those populist desires with expertise in terms of things like creating the Federal Reserve. Is there a lesson with Wilson on how to walk that line and marry those two desired goals, to be on the side of the little guy while also exhibiting principles of sound practical governance?
Yes, indeed. I think Wilson is particularly useful to modern day Democrats if they will step back and try to get some perspective on his political thinking. There are tensions, internal tensions all over the place in the Democratic Party. He did not impart a new core ideal to the domestic debate when he ran for president in 1912, but he took the various political myths of the nation, and he was able to become more than a balancer of constituencies in the Democratic Party or interests in the Democratic Party. He was to become a balancer of political myths. And so one of his myths certainly was progressivism, which carries a respect for ideas. But there were other myths too: the Jeffersonian myth of the individual, the myth of popular sovereignty, that the people ought to be in control of the government instead of the elites, the fight for the outsider, which came from Jackson. And he wove a tapestry of ideals for the public debate, and he crushed Theodore Roosevelt and the Republicans by using this approach. And this, it seems to me, is a very fertile approach for the Democratic Party today as it seeks to balance the Sanders people and the Clinton people moving forward toward 2020.
Now, you're speaking a lot about myths here. You mentioned the book. There's a difference between a myth and an illusion, correct?
Yes, definitely. I don't mean a myth, obviously, as a fantasy or something that never existed and never can exist. It's really the equivalent of an ideal or an ethos or a pillar of political faith. All men are created equal is a core ideal of the Democratic Party. It obviously isn't true. All men and women are not equal, but it is a goal for Democrats to be working toward. And it is also a philosophical lens where you begin your consideration of a political problem before you start applying the facts of the current situation. It is these core ideals that the Democrats need to return to, and I think they can increase their reach into the electorate beyond the 50% that they now have.
when you shift to more recent presidents, FDR, Truman, Johnson, are there different lessons to be learned from these are people that current Democrats have a bit more intrinsic understanding of. Are there things that you believe the average person doesn't grasp properly of those presidents?
Let me give you an example. All Democrats who have any grasp of political history will refer to the 1948 campaign that Truman waged as one of the great political hero sagas of the modern Democratic age. And indeed, like every other Democrat, I love that story. But it seems to me that when Democrats talk about it now, they're missing the point. The point they generally make is that Truman beat the odds in order to carry that election against Thomas Dewey and the Republicans in 1948. But that's not really what is most useful to the Democratic Party now. Instead, the real question is how Harry Truman beat the Republicans that year. And the way that he did it was to fuse the Democratic Party with its core ideals. He explained the purpose behind the controversies of the day, and he kept lobbing these big myths into the political debate, things like the people versus the special interests and the ideal of the New Deal, economic security for all. And instead of the Republicans controlling that debate in 1948, suddenly Truman and the Democrats were able to take it back from the Republicans by forcing the electorate to make up their minds about the election based on the political core ideals of the Democratic Party and not the Republican Party.
So, going from Truman to Johnson, Truman, of course, was part of the Democratic shift to being the Civil Rights Party, having desegregated the armed forces around the same time. Hubert Humphrey wins a plank in the Democratic Party platform embracing civil rights, which causes the Dixiecrats to walk out of the 48 convention. And then Lyndon Johnson, 64, actually passes the Civil Rights Act. So that you have a whole recalibration of the Democratic Party's position on race in America. What should Democrats today take from Johnson's role in that, and how does that square with what Democrats need to do today to win back those white working class voters that went to Donald Trump?
Well, you're absolutely right in your history, and I am an old civil rights guy. I have been twice elected chairman of the board of the Mexican-American Legal Defense Fund, MALDEF. I have spent most of my career battling for civil rights. I approve of what the Democratic Party did in the 1960s to move out of white supremacy and into civil rights. I fought for it within the Democratic Party for years and years and years. I don't think the Democratic Party is going to go back on that commitment. I think it is well understood by rank and file Democrats. I think it is solidly in place. But I don't see that there should be a necessary disconnect between trying to recover the loyalty of the white working class and maintaining our civil rights commitment. There are lots of ways to appeal to the white working class. Many of them all over this country in Appalachia and elsewhere are outsiders. And the Democrats need to have a non-racial narrative that can unite all kinds of outsiders, no matter their color or ethnicity, to say, look, we've got to put resources into the people who are having a hard time, and we've got to bust up the rules that prevent people from getting ahead in this country. I think you can make an argument about that. I'm optimistic about Democratic chances of doing that. And now I think is the time when Democrats have to work it out among themselves.
It strikes me that the easy part of that case is saying we all have a common interest in affordable health insurance. We all have a common interest in affordable education or low cost of living, a reliable retirement security. Where it gets tough is when you start talking about actual instances of racial bigotry, whether it's involving the police or educational funding disparities or things like that, or even if it's just stuff on TV like the Roseanne TV show. People are very quick to take offense and say, if you're calling me racist or my people racist, I don't want to hear what you have to say about anything else. Is there anything from the way Truman and Johnson handled civil rights that can inform us about how Democrats can walk that line today?
If you go back and read Lyndon Johnson's speech when he introduced the Voting Rights Act to the Congress in March of 1963, I think you will see that he over and over again emphasized that this was not a particular bill that was for only Black people, that this was opening a city of hope to Americans of all ethnicities. And I think the key to this is to emphasize a broader argument to construct one public narrative for the country at whole that that all kinds of people can lock into. You take a guy like Connor Lamb in Southwest Pennsylvania about a month ago. He won his election by saying, listen, we've got to put the government behind the little guy again. We've got to assure the little guy that the government is there to help him. And he won a very tough election on that basis. And he was able to capture lots more of this constituency we have been talking about. But he did it not in terms of the specifics of hyper-specific policies. He did it by an emotional argument that people could connect into, could lock into. And this is exactly the kind of emotional, simple, blunt, honest kind of argument that Democrats have largely refrained from making for the last generation.
We're talking with Thomas Reston, author of Soul of a Democrat, published by All Points Books here on the New Books in Politics podcast. You mentioned Connor Lamb, who in 2018 won a special election in a Republican district that had been Republican held for a long time. He did not say all that much about Donald Trump in that special election. And you suggest in your book that perhaps Democrats in the initial wake of the 2016 election are perhaps too obsessed about Donald Trump. Is that a fair characterization of your case?
You bet it is. I think the Democrats have developed a monomania with Donald Trump. And I think they've missed the opportunity to think seriously about themselves by focusing so closely on Donald Trump. I was very disappointed in the so-called reassessment that the Democrats did in the wake of the 2016 election. But I think things are changing now. I think now that the primaries have begun, I think you are seeing people begin to grapple with what kind of Democratic Party we are to have. And I think the people who have dominated the Democratic Party for the last couple of generations, the progressives, and I'm talking about progressives in the tradition of Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, that line of progressives, I think the Bernie Sanders people come out of a different part of the Democratic tradition. I think that progressive dominant tradition now is struggling. And I think you see in the results of these primary elections, new counter centers of influence rising in the party. People like Doug Jones in Alabama, who in a way has a William Jennings Bryan, a kind of a more moral approach to his politics. People like Connor Lamb returning to the political myth of the New Deal. And indeed, in Pennsylvania, You even had four self-identified socialists winning Democratic nominations for the lower house in Pennsylvania. So I think the struggle now over the future of the Democratic Party is beginning. And I think that this will be the decisive struggle, perhaps for a whole generation.
Now, we talked about illusions before. Are you still concerned that there are certain illusions that Democrats are trapped by?
Yes, I do. I think some of these illusions are, well, we just need to get back to normal, or the Democratic Party doesn't matter anymore, or our consultants and experts will save us, or we can't do anything about our problems. I think the Democrats have to take heart and take confidence in themselves and, as I say, return to their core ideals. And I think this is the way forward for the Democrats.
You mentioned return to normal there, and so much of the Trump presidency has been a complaint that we should not accept this as normal. Is there potentially a parallel in 2020 to 1920, when after two terms of Woodrow Wilson, there was a lot of social upheaval in the aftermath of the Great War, where in terms of labor relations and race relations and economic distress, Warren Harding comes in and runs on return to normalcy, and that seems to be sufficient. Are you concerned that Democrats might think that's all we need to do and not put forth enough of a robust narrative for their own case?
Well, I think that would be catastrophic, actually. The idea of the Democratic Party as the kind of party that the Republicans put forward in the 1920s, it's so phlegmatic. I think the United States is in terrible shape these days in many respects, and I think the American people really have to work hard at understanding each other and restoring the United States to a position of honor in the international community and making the American government work for all kinds of Americans who have been left out, as well as the middle class. I mean, the Democratic Party built the middle class of this country with many of its policies.
You don't have a chapter dedicated to Barack Obama, but you do discuss his relevance to the current state of the party. Are there things about the Obama presidency that Democrats should be, or Obama's campaigns and governing, that Democrats should be emulating, or are there elements that Democrats should be more critical of?
Well, I was proud to support Barack Obama when he ran for president. I think he was a very fine president in many respects. The reason why I didn't dwell on his presidency is that my book is about the core ideals of our party. And the last time a core ideal was brought forward by the Democrats and used by the Democrats to dominate the power struggle was in 1933, when Franklin Roosevelt imposed his economic security paradigm. I think that Barack Obama was probably the greatest orator that the Democratic Party had produced since Woodrow Wilson. But I think once he became president, he didn't either think or use these big credos or fundamental political pillars of political belief in order to mobilize the yearning of the country. He didn't enough connect the details of his policies to the political mission of the Democratic Party in the life of the Republic.
So we're talking before the midterm elections in 2018. As you indicated, there are some candidates who are not running as Trump-obsessed candidates. We're focusing on local issues and things of that sort. But we're going to be in relatively short order in the primary season. I imagine a lot of candidates are going to declare a presidential candidate soon after the midterms. And now you're talking to the Democratic primary electorate nationally, not so much the general electorates in House races and states. Is there a risk that we're going to be very Trump obsessed very shortly? And is there counsel you would give to the potential, 15 or so people running for president, where they should be putting their focus on?
Well, yes. I mean, I think the Democrats have wounded President Trump with all of our criticism. So I'm not, I too am a resistor, but I don't think the Democratic Party is going to be able to get away with an anti-Trump message, leaving it at that for 2020. It didn't work in 2016, and I don't think it will work in 2020. I think that we have to think about what we are offering to the nation. I think that we should find it natural that different parts of the Democratic Party, different geographies in the United States should be different. Massachusetts Democrats are different from Wyoming Democrats, and I think we should find that natural. And I think the key to this is to create this public narrative that I've been talking about of the different core ideals of the party as a way to unify the party. I'm going out speaking these days about the book, and everybody asks me, well, who among the 15 or so Democratic candidates is really picking up your message here? And my response is that so far, each of them seems to have a little bit of these seven core ideals of the Democratic Party. But I don't see so far a candidate who is really trying to unite the party by balancing the core ideals of the party, which I think will make us more attractive to a greater majority of the American people.
The book is Soul of a Democrat, The Seven Core Ideals That Made Our Party and Our Country Great by Thomas B. Reston, published by All Points Books. Thank you for being on New Books in Politics.
Thank you.